Sorry about that delay over there. Okay, we're on page 192. Okay, what I want to do today is we spoke yesterday about the idea of what's considered glot, and we mentioned that there are a number of different ways that an animal could become a trefa, and the only one that we really have to be concerned about is if it has any piercings in the lungs. And we say, what can you do? Very simple. You could take a, you could blow into the lung and see if there anything, you know, kind of any air comes out like a balloon. So that's what we said. However, the Gemara mentioned there's something called the sircha, that there's some type of adhesion that can block the potential, hole. And so what do you do when you have these adhesions? So we see that there's a possibility of removing these adhesions. And how do you remove them? So you kind of, I guess, put some pressure on them and you mush them around and they can fall off. Okay, that's what we said. That being the case, you know, shall we say, if you're a shochet, if you're a ritual slaughterer, there's a lot of money at stake here for you to remove the sirchas that are, shall we say, bad sirchas. Not all sirchas are created equally. And that's what we kind of spoke about yesterday, different types of adhesions. And it requires an expertise distinguishing between them and your ability to remove them. And sometimes you'll be very excited to remove them because a lot of money's on the line. And that was the case. The Shulchan Aruch in source 10, so we're on page 192, source 10, says as follows. Anywhere where they actually said that a sircha, these adhesions, are forbidden in the actual lung themselves, ain't hafresh benchit teh suricha daka kudasara, doesn't matter if it's really thin, like one's hair, or benchit teh ava v'chazaka v'chavrachava kidula, or if they're very, very thick and strong, like the length of a guda, length of a thumb. V'loka otam shemachim b'yad. And we don't agree with those people who say, I could, you know, yeah, the sirchas I could just like pop off and remove. We don't actually agree with that. V'im nim nis ma'acha. What happens in the event that a person is able to press down and remove them? Tunakel. Okay, those people who are lenient. But chen hanohe kein ki'ilu machel trefot l'Yisrael. Wow. And people who are lackadaisical, people who are lenient in this area, meaning that you can remove those people who can remove those adhesions and they still eat that food and they're lenient, they are feeding, listen to this, trefot to the Jewish people. Wow, that's a very strong line. Meaning, if you have an adhesion, that's it. It is essentially considered...
Most animals and most cows have adhesions.
Yes, so this is a major issue because just from a financial perspective, that means that the shochet is going to come. What percentage of animals have these adhesions? A very high percentage. I don't think it's more than 50. But I think it's like 30 or 40%. It's a very high number.
If they no sell question. It to like a non-Jew.
Okay, so the non-Jew, right, but they don't like, have much money.
Does it like affect the price of the animal, these adhesions? But or is, since it's so well kosher.
Oh, okay, so that's exactly what that's gonna be. Okay. So will it affect the price from a non-Jewish perspective? I don't think so. I don't think the non-Jews really care. I don't think if, remember, it doesn't affect the quality of the actual
pig, you know.
What was that? Yeah. Okay. Now on this, the Rama says, which is in the Yud Gimel over there, for Yesh Makir in the Mashmesh Pesrichos, that there are people who can rub these adhesions, and what they're able to do, v'lemachabahem, and they can press down on them. V'omrim shesricha imamech adam ba'kol hayam lo tina take. There are some people who could, you know, press on them and nothing will happen. So, if you're able to actually press down on them and remove them, we can be lenient. Oh, Isricha, which can be removed easily, is not really a sricha. It's really considered a little bit of pus.
So this is not a cyst. This is like a
This is a cyst, exactly. It wasn't an adhesion. Now, I don't know. See, the picture that we have in 191 is not great. You know, actually...
the heart?
No, I think it's inside the lung.
Okay.
I actually do have a picture downstairs in my safer, and I forgot to bring it up. But I can show people a picture. Or I could just Google it in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. But okay. Fine, but that... Now, in Kitzin Ramah, it's a leniency. This is the law of the land. This is what we do. So remember, this is the Ramah. He's writing in Poland. He's writing essentially from Minhag Ashkenaz. He's saying, they have to rely on. But the guy who checks it has to be. And by the way, they in a lot of places, they have two different positions. They have a guy who's the shochet, and he will shecht, and you know, someone else, the sidekick, so to speak, who will check the lungs, right? Because it's inefficient if one guy is doing both. So they want to maximize efficiency, and the one guy who shecht, and the guy who's on the, you know, checking them out later. Okay, and you have the Yir Yishamayim. What is the Yir Yishamayim? Because you have to be trustworthy to know what's a sircha, what's not a sircha. Is it a rear, is it not a rear? Do we trust that person, trust the person? Because it's literally insider knowledge. You have to trust the shkacha. Okay. Fine. And if you press too hard, okay.
Okay, wait. So we have to trust here. But if a Jew opens a restaurant, we don't trust him even if he's a religious Jew. Like he doesn't.
So we'll try.
Let's say we get CO. We don't need.
Right. Listen, the halacha is in theory if I eat at your house, so you're Mashiach. So I trust you. The issue when it comes to finances and business and money is that we know people care more about money. Sometimes even the... Yeah.
That's a fair point.
So, okay. The Yechavedas, number 11. No.
Like
this is a question.
Like the benefit of the doubt.
No. That's a very good question. We give people the benefit of the doubt, but not when it comes to...
money.
When it comes to potentially benefiting from it financially.
Yeah. Okay.
The in number 11... the Yechavedas, which of course was Ravadi Yosef, he says, I want to tell you, the minhag of the Sfaradim is to always hold like the Shulchan Aruch, and not the leniency of the Ramah. This is a well-known statement. He's going to go all out on this. Asher, okay, and kol acher d'svar Hashem, tzrichli yizim, odi, be careful, shelo l'chol ela basar chalak uglat. It has, so that's, now you understand. When we talk about glat meat, this is what we're referring to. We're referring to smooth inside the lungs.
The body. Say it's glat meat, right? But
yeah.
How often is it glat meat?
Okay.
That's what we have to trust, right?
Have to trust, exactly.
But that's a business also.
Well, okay, you're right. But that's why, that's another reason why kosher meat's so expensive. Because
yeah.
Not only is we shechted, but a good percentage of the actual cows can't be used. So he goes on to say, She's speaking about the Sephardic opinion, is that we've accepted the Shulchan Aruch, that it must be glad. Meaning, we don't rely on sirchas that we could remove. That maybe it's considered pas, or it's rear, and no, we don't rely on any of those leniencies. He goes on to say, it's a mitzvah and a chova, right, for the students, in our generation, Lorette, to tell the people in the drushas, you must eat only chalak and glat. Fine. And I know that, okay, that people, and he says, in there are those poor Ashkenazi who also rely on this stringency as well. And he says that's very important. The Vilna Gaon in 12, and what does he say? He argued, Avala Rashba, Vichuva, and Simon Shindalit. It's funny. You know why they flipped around the Dalit Shini? Because it spells the word dash. So it's like a shtick thing. Kasav ozeh shakot tabach sha'use kazem masakhin asa. If there are people, if there are slaughterers who press down and remove these sirchas, we literally take him down from his position. We fire him on the spot. So we see here that even though it may be the Ramah has a small leniency. The Vilna Gaon is not very happy with it. Let's take a look at kashrut policy from the OU. Fascinating. Okay? We know that what is the policy of essentially American Jewry? 13. The Shurach describes many types of adhesions in intricate detail, the overwhelming majority of which render the animal treifa. The Ramah concludes the discussion about lung adhesions with a description of a method of peeling and testing many types of adhesions, thereby resulting in many more animals determined to be kosher. The Ramah himself expressed certain hesitations about this leniency, but because it gained wide acceptance and did have a firm basis, he ruled that it could be allowed. However, he cautioned that the peeling and testing must be performed by an exceedingly God-fearing individual. A lot of money on the line. Because this peeling is mentioned and proved by the Ramah, by not the Mechaber, Rabbi Yosef Al-Tashanach, Sephardim follow the Mechaber, as we saw in the Chavadas, and we know, as we've said many times, are required to eat only galat, or chalak in Hebrew. Galat, by the way, is the Yiddish term. Meat as defined by the Mechaber. The Mechaber is also the author of the Beit Yosef. Therefore, such meat is termed Galat Chalak Beit Yosef. For Ashkenazim, there's a tradition that a small, easily removable adhesions is defined as a lower class of adhesion known as a rear, and that the presence of up to two such small, easily removable adhesions still qualifies them as glat according to Ashkenazi tradition. Eating glat is a worthy stringency and avoids potential problems raised by the Ramah's controversial leniency. So we now have a situation where here in America it is standard practice, which is why we tell people when you go to Israel you need to eat mahadrin meat, right? Because rabbanut meat is not glat, right? And the accepted practice of all communities in America is to eat only galat meat. For Friday, there's nothing to even talk about, right? But there's so you have in Israel, and you will see a little bit here too, galat chalak bet Yosef. So if you see meat that's chalak bet Yosef, it doesn't rely on that leniency of very small, small adhesions that are really rears, that are really pus, that are removable. But we will give, the OU will give hashkacha to a cow that was checked that had two small little
pus. So how many adhesions do they have to have in order for us to
survive? No, any adhesions we'll say is no good. If there's such a small adhesion, which is really not an adhesion, it's really almost like pus, and it's removable, that will allow, if there's two. But that would not be good for Sephardim. I'll tell you, this is a very serious issue. I don't think anybody here is Sephardi, but if you're Sephardic, it is not so easy that you're allowed to eat regular meat. It is not so simple at all. Real Sephardic rabbis and their communities say you cannot eat galat kosher. You need to eat chalak bet Yosef. So unless there's no choice.
I'm talking about meat specifically, not chicken.
Okay, hold on. We'll get the chicken in a second. Chicken on the next page. Okay. Give me 1 second. What did they do? What did they do about... Okay, what do you do about dishes? Huh? You go to someone's house, and they're not mocked. So again, in North America, everyone has chalak. Everyone's chalak. Everyone is glut. You can't get non-glut. There's no kosher agency in America that will certify it. So not a problem. You go to Israel. You go to someone's house who's Ashkenazi, and they're not as bachamer, you know, the Israelis. Baruch Hashem, remember, we discussed this way back when. There's a difference in philosophy between kosher agencies in Israel and in America. In North America, kosher is considered a higher standard, and we want people to have a higher standard when it comes to food, and it can be done. In Israel, the job of Rabbanut is to ensure that millions and millions and millions of Jews, Israelis, are eating kosher. So it's a totally different hashkafic philosophy. And this is the Rabbanut is very open. Why? Because they need to provide kosher to them, including an army.
Wouldn't you say that's the same strategy as like Europe then, technically?
The difference between the European strategy is that, I mean, it's so complicated there. So you can't like publicize the shkachas and, but it's not the dip in Israel. They need to provide kosher
to eat kosher, right? especially in, like, obviously here we're very privileged. We get to choose what, like, we have, like, different organizations that specifically tell us which is kosher, which is not, right? But like in Europe, we're just trying to get as many people to eat kosher as possible, right? So we put out these lists that basically show us the kashrus, right? So why wouldn't we just...
So it is true there are certain hashgachas in Europe which are a bit of a lower standard, but most of them are pretty high standard.
But they don't have a kashrus symbol.
That's because of anti-Semitism.
Like in Europe, I heard from my brother that you're able to go to the bakeries there because, like, As long as it's not a dairy bakery.
Again, because they don't have choice. Yeah. But again, bread is different. Bread is a little different. So, because bread's a staple and you need bread, so that's what. So, in Israel, the Rabbanu, their goal is that we need to bring kosher to whatever, 6 million people. How are we going to do that? So, we have no choice but to rely on certain leniencies. So, so the hashkafic difference between Rabbanut and, let's say, the OU is very... Now, the OU also wants Jews to eat kosher, but they're not willing to have a compromise. They want a high standard because they can. Whereas in Israel, they need to bring kosher to every single village, every single town, and every single army base in the country. So how they get... They can't have such a high standard. It's going to be impossible. Okay. It might be better if you eat at someone's house who's not glad.
Would you eat Rabbanu, like Durabanan or whatever. Like, not you specifically, but I'm saying, like,
listen, you can't, here's what's important. Okay. You can't say that Rabbanu food is not kosher.
Yeah.
That's simply fallacy. That's Lashon Hara. Okay. That's not speaking properly about a kosher agency. That's God fearing. But we want to rely on sort of, for example, this is a great example. This is like blood meat, right? Okay. Now, it's source 14. So what about if I go to someone's house who's not, I actually have no clue what the time is.
It's like 1:60.
Yeah, 5 minutes. Well, you guys have to go to show.
Yeah, I'm not going to show.
Okay.
I have to go.
Oh, I'll get your mask. Okay, fine. So, let's say you eat someone's house and you're eating on their plate. So he says it's fine. Source 14. Mutar lochosham tafshinjinam mechle basar. You can eat someone's house as long as it's actually not meat, even though they use their pots and pans and plates for non-chalak meat. He says it's fine. And source 15, Yaakov Yosef says, you invite this son's house who's not makbid on it, on having chalak. And this is, okay, so not just for Ashkenazi, even for a Sephardi, which is a much bigger deal. Because Sephardi mamish, it could be a tray for them. Nonetheless, he still says you can still eat from the dishes. It's not a problem. But he said, obviously, if there's a dish which has rice and meat in it, he says, do not eat that rice. But if it's just a rice dish that was made in a meat pot, he believed that would be okay to eat, not a problem. Wow, okay. Let's do chickens. Chickens is a very important topic. So what about chickens?
Question, please?
Yes, Rivka.
Is the halacha different if you're going to a Rabbanut restaurant versus your friend's house?
What a really, really interesting question.
Yeah.
Meaning, I'll go to Rabbanut restaurants, and I will eat whatever, and I won't eat the meat because I don't know what its status is. And therefore, I could assume Rabbanut meat, restaurant meat, regular meat, because it would be cheaper.
But you have to use Ben Adam
Machaber. Right. So that's, was that interesting. I have no clue.
That's a
really good question. Meaning, is the fact that I'm more lenient because it's been Adon Chavero? Give me 1 second. Let me think here.
That's a doozy right
there. I mean, let's say, for example, you're going to be lenient on during Shemitah, and you'll eat Heter Mechira, which the Rabbanut relies on, meaning selling the land of Israel to a non-Jew during Shemitah, as opposed to whatever, or Tzabeti, whatever. I don't want to get into it right now because it's super complicated. But let's just say the leniencies that you want that you do rely on, let's say, and so you'll eat the vegetables, and let's assume they were cleaned. I don't know, again, I don't know the difference between cleaning vegetables in Rabbanut and cleaning vegetables in Mahadrin. I'm not so sure. I have no idea. Although I'm sure you can be found. It's public information. So, no, I'll tell you why I think it still would apply, Rifka. It's a very good question. I'll tell you why I think it would apply. The end of the Yalkut Yosef says, they don't mention it anywhere. I'm only reading, maybe better see the whole tshuva inside, which we can do. But it's not like he's saying, oh, because you're a guest and, you know, Mrs. Goldberg or Mrs., you know, Buchbot or some Sephardi last name, right, is going to be upset at you or mad at you, is going to cause, and therefore we're lawing and leniency. I don't see that anywhere here. It's not been quoted that that's what you're drawing on. And it is kind of rare that a person who's makbid on Mahadrin is going to rub in a restaurant. That's not that common. I'm not saying it's not crazy to do. So I don't, at this, based on this, they don't you know, mention any situation of Dafka by insult somebody.
So what would be a comparable case in Toronto, let's say, in terms of kashrus in a Jewish home? Like, is it conservative people? Is it
all meat has to be...
obviously, all meat has to be kosher.
You can't get an argument about meat.
But the thing is, like, in Israel, we just trust. Like, it's a lot more trust-based and stuff like that in terms of, like, you go to the person's house and hopefully he's a kosher Jew, right? But, like, if... Like, let's say we go to, like, a conservative person's household, like, he can technically be...
It's complicated. It's a very good question. There's a... Rav Moshe Feinstein says, what about if there's a parent whose child has become Shomer Shabbat, and they're not Shomer Shabbat? Can you trust them? The general practice is that if a person's not Shomer Shabbat, we can't trust their kashrut because they're not Neman. If they don't keep Shabbat, how do you know that the fruit is really kosher? So the answer is, if it's a grandparent, and why do you trust it? You trust it because they love their child or their grandchild, and they know that if their child or grandchild were to catch them doing something not right, they'd stop eating there. And that is so important for a parent or a grandparent that makes them trustworthy, even though they might not keep Shabbat. So for a friend, you can extrapolate, but only if it's that type of extrapolation. Okay, I see it's already, it's 29, so I guess we'll stop there. We'll talk about... Glut kosher with chickens, which is a fascinating, fascinating case. God willing to... Will you need it tomorrow?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, fine.
Every day.
Tomorrow. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.